Latter-day Saints Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2012 Youth Education Conference held in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
How are you all doing? I said I wouldn't do this, but come on. How are you all doing?
Good.
All right. So did you guys enjoy the opening video?
Yeah.
Right. Happy to hear it. Just a disclaimer, I personally did not work on it. Friends of mine made that back in 2008. For those of you that are interested in looking it up, it's the Ryan versus Dorkman link on the pages that should be floating around. I think I have enough for everyone. All right. Like you said, I am John Oliver. A little bit about myself here, as soon as PowerPoint decides to work for me. Don't you love these things? Aha! There we go. All right, like you said, I'm a computer nerd at heart, a computer junkie. I've been working with them since Windows 95. For anyone older than me, that probably doesn't seem like much, but for me, I was probably five, maybe, when I got my first computer and started playing with it. Currently, I'm a web programmer. I do PHP programming and MySQL on the side. I also work at a web hosting firm known as Worldwide Web Hosting LLC. And I currently do the audio and text tutorials for our clients at that point, so I'm working with video with them. I own a company called Techia LLC. It's the branch of web programming that I do on the side. And I also own eFrag Television, which is in live esports broadcasting, essentially ESPN for video games. We do live broadcasting at the big LAN events with Xboxes and PCs and all that. I was homeschooled throughout my entire youth, and I'm also a proud member of the church. Moving forward here, a couple hobbies that I have. I'm a Second Amendment advocate, aka I love firearms. I shoot about every week when I have a chance. Lock picking, legally, of course, when you have a chance, it's a good time killer, and it's a fun thing to kind of try to wrap your head around. Motion graphics, this is something I do both as a hobby and a job. I do motion graphics on the side whenever I have a chance and whenever the client pays me. And it's also fun for me personally because I have a chance to go in there and try to challenge myself to make something new or something exciting, something that I haven't done before. And with motion graphics, the options are endless when you work with them. Web design and audio recording. I have a recording studio at home that you can see there in the bottom picture. That's pretty much it for me. Let's go ahead and move forward here, what exactly we're going to cover here. But before we do, I have a couple basic questions so I kind of have an understanding of where you all come from and what we kind of need to focus on. So obviously you're all here for video making, filmmaking, things of that nature, right? Okay. Who here does any type of photography? Who has a DSLR or is interested in photography, takes pictures? Okay. Good number of you. Who here owns a video camera? Either be a small one, a DSLR, or a professional grade camera? Okay, so most of you. And final question, just so I kind of understand where you all are. Who's done video editing on the computer? Okay. Hopefully that'll change by the time this is done. So what we're actually going to be covering here, we have three main categories. We're going to be covering equipment and how to take care of your equipment, how to go over the basic operations, what exactly you need for a basic production, and then do's and don'ts to make sure your location stays safe. Can everyone hear me okay? Just making sure the mic sounds quiet. This one is... Let's try this one. Check, check. Ah, there we go. Now can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Do I need to repeat anything?
No.
Okay. Am I boring you already? Come on now. moving on to get the shot, we're actually going to be covering different camera angles, different techniques on how to get the perfect shot for your scene and your production. We're also going to be covering how to actually get full coverage of your scene with little amount of time wasted as possible, because that's very important when you're on set and trying to get everything done. And then audio recording basics and what you need to look out for. Then we're also going to go over some editing stuff. We'll teach you some basic tricks and tips on how to have smooth edits, when you should use transition, things of that nature. And then we'll also show you some tools on that may be helpful in your project. All right, basic video equipment. We've got four main categories that we're going to be looking at. These are on the completely different ends of the spectrum. On the left, you have a Sony Handy Camera, which is very similar to a basic camcorder that you'll use for shooting family reunions, birthday parties, things of that nature. And then on the right, you have the camera known as the Red Epic. It's an $80,000 camera that is currently shot to be being used to shoot The Hobbit, the new film that's coming out, and also many other productions. In between those two, we have DSLRs. Everyone who has a DSLR, can you raise your hand again? Okay. For the mid to high-end DSLRs, you actually have a recording functionality on your camera. The DSLRs are amazing, especially the Canon T2Is up, especially the 5Ds. Because you have fully interchangeable lenses, you have full control over your camera, and you're working at HD quality. They have some of the best video quality that you will see for the price. Moving up a little bit, you're looking at prosumer grade. Currently have featured a Canon XF100. These are going to run you a little bit higher. Normally they start around $3,000 and they work up. That's an older model over there. That's a Canon GL2. That's for standard definition video. It's hard to find standard def, and that's a good thing, because no one wants to see standard definition anymore. It's tiny compared to HD, and the quality just isn't there. Moving forward, the pros and cons between working with low grade and high grade. Pros for the low grade stuff is it's cheap. You can pick one up for a couple $100s, and you can get pretty decent quality out of a low grade camera. They're easy to learn. They have very basic controls, so you don't have to go in and master manual focus and exposure and working with exposures on the fly. And it's normally pretty cheap to get accessories like extended batteries and things of that nature. Cons. You're looking at, because it's lower end hardware, we'll get into the details a little bit more later, it's normally lesser quality. The hardware that goes into it, and because of this, it normally ends up being very grainy or very blocky, depending on the camera and the hardware. You also don't have full control over your camera. For example, with a DSLR, it's very easy to manual focus throughout your entire shot. With a low-end camera, you almost always have to rely on the autofocus technology that's in there. Have you all seen a YouTube video where all of a sudden the video just goes all blurry and then comes right back? That's the downfall with the lower end autofocus technology. Low light is almost impossible with lower end technology. The chip size in a camera, which is the sensor that brings in all the light, is very small because it's cheaper quality. So to compensate for this, you have to make sure that you shoot on a very well lit set, and we'll go over that and get the shot later. High end, of course, your video quality goes way up because you have a much larger sensor, which means you can bring in more light. More light means the quality is going to go much higher. You have full control. You can do pretty much anything you want, from controlling the ISO, the aperture settings, portal, or autofocus, or manual focus, as I should say. And because it's a larger chip sensor, you're going to get much better results in low light, especially if you can't bring your own lighting to a location. Cons, looking at money, of course. They're not very cheap, but they will last you forever if you take care of them. That camera I bought back in 2003, and it still shoots the same as it did the day I bought it. And it's not the easiest to learn on. So that's something you have to keep in mind. When you get a higher end camera, spend time with it, understand it, and play with it, because if you don't, you're not going to understand what your camera is doing and why it's doing it. Moving forward, can you shoot a movie on a consumer level camera? Answer is absolutely. It's not the equipment that makes a decent film. It helps, but what goes into a film is the story, the cinematography, the photography, and the emotion that you put behind your project. If you're just going to go out and shoot something for fun, that's fine. If you're testing your camera, I have no problems with that. But if you're shooting something seriously and you put emotion behind it, it will show on the camera. What do you need? Obviously a camera. Duh. A tripod is a must. If you're ever going to work on a semi-decent project, you need a tripod that you can work with and understand. Because if you don't have a tripod, you're stuck here all day during your production. It gets heavy. A small light kit. I actually picked this small light kit up at Walmart last night during that wonderful thunderstorm that we had. Scared the bejesus out of me. I paid $35 for it. And this will get you very good results with lower end and higher end, of course, technology. Of course, you have to have an idea. You have to have a project that you actually want to work on, a script idea, a story, something that you actually want to put to film. And then beyond that, a decent computer for editing is always helpful, and you need to practice with your camera. All right, moving forward, here are some basic tips. I know this is kind of the boring part, but just run through this pretty quickly. Clean it. It doesn't matter what kind of hardware you have, make sure you take care of it. If you do, it's going to last you a long time. When you clean it, do you use this? Why? This is not a very soft material. Yes, it feels great on your back, but on that camera lens, it's going to scratch it to death. What you're looking for is something like this. This is lens cleaning cloth. I'm going to go ahead and pass that around. Notice how soft it is compared to your shirt. That is going to be very helpful with cleaning your lenses. And clean them before you start any production. It's the worst feeling in the world when you actually, well, it was clean, thank you. It's the worst feeling in the world when you get into the editing room after shooting for a week-long project and all of a sudden you notice this big piece of dust right there in your lens. And there's really nothing you can do about it at that point. So make sure you take care of it beforehand and it will treat you well. White balance. White balance is an interesting one. Who here understands the concept of what white balance is? Who uses it on their camera? Okay. We'll go into a little bit more details here in just a moment. But yeah, that's a subject we're definitely going to touch on. Like I said, practice. Practice makes perfect. Obvious. And learn every function of your camera. Like I said before, if you know your camera like the back of your hand, then you won't have any hiccups during production where you're like, where's that setting? I don't know how to change that. What do I need to do? And then you have your crew, your actor sitting there waiting for you, and you look like a nitwit. Don't use built-in transitions on your camera. Please don't, I beg you. You can do in-camera editing if you don't have a computer, but it's really worth your time if this is something you're honestly thinking about to get a semi-decent. You can spend $500 and have a computer that will be fully capable of editing your video. So think about that. But don't use the built-in transitions. I know the mosaics look cool. No, don't. Cleaning your camera, like I said, the cloth should be passing around. Feel free to feel it. White balancing. This is a project I worked on a couple weeks ago. It's Eagle Scout Court of Honor for one of our boys. And unfortunately, I got there, I had work late. I got there about 2 minutes before we were supposed to start, so I had very little time to get set up, and unfortunately one of the things I wasn't able to do is white balance on scene. Great looking picture, right?
I was
going to
ask, what does DSLR stand for?
It's a digital SOR. I can't remember what the SOR stands for right now, I'm sorry. Decent looking picture. This was shot with my Canon T2i. It's a good looking picture. Pretty PowerPoint is kind of fuzzing it up a little bit. But after white balance color correction in the computer, a little bit of improvement. Let's jump back here. Without white balancing, and then with white balancing. It makes a huge difference. So try to do that in camera before you start your production. All right, moving forward. Basic understanding of what white balance does is, as we all know, white is RGB mixed together equally, correct? So what you're doing is you're essentially taking a white point on the video, and the camera's going to process and say, okay, I need this much red, I need this much green, and this much blue to make it pure white. And once the camera realizes this, then it can take care of it from there. White balancing will change from different lighting sources. So if you move from the sunlight into indoors where you have fluorescent lights, you're going to notice a much different color tone. So if at all possible, try to cut to different lighting sources rather than actually moving the camera handheld. Because if you do this, your camera is going to get a really weird and funky green color tint to it, and it doesn't look very good. Moving forward a little bit, try to keep your set as safe as possible. This is not a good example. Carpet is very painful to tape things down with, but tape down your wires, tie down your wires when at all possible. If I can find my lab here, got a tail. Tie down your wires so that if I go and I trip on my camera, it's not gonna destroy my camera. It's not gonna destroy those connections. If you simply tie a knot to your tripod or to your handhold or even the top, it's gonna save your equipment. I've actually ruined headphone ports on cameras before because I was working with a tripod and had my headphones on for audio monitoring, and I needed to walk away to grab a slate board. I forgot I had my headphones on. I completely sheared off the jack inside of the camera. That was not a fun day. All right, before we move on to get the shot, did anyone have any questions really quickly about equipment? Sure. It depends. They're going to be lower quality. Don't expect the image quality that you'd get from a DSLR or a professional grade camera, but they are a video source. I'm glad you brought that up. Sure.
Your Canon, is it a 550D?
No, I wish it was. No, that is the T2i. That is a $900 camera. The 5D, the Mark III actually just came out. That's $3,000 for the body alone. So, but going back to the handhelds, I've actually seen people use iPhones to shoot films, and the movie looks beautiful. So the same kind of technique and idea can be brought to the little point-and-shoot cameras. The main thing to keep in mind is, again, decent lighting, because the more lighting, the higher quality you're going to have with lower-end technology, and some way to stabilize it, because you're working with such a small package, it's very difficult to keep it smooth when you're doing your pans and you're working with it. So try to get some weight behind it. Try to put put a tripod underneath of it, and that would be very helpful. But yes, it's absolutely possible. So it's actually probably a good thing to start learning on. Moving forward to get the shots, unless anyone else had any equipment questions. Sure. Dolly is, it's actually coming up here in a few slides, so you'll be able to kind of get an idea of what it is then. All right, quick refresher. We're gonna go over the shots and the shot angles, things of that nature. We've seen this slide before. Camera movements, which includes dollying. Starting off from the top, panning is when, again, if I can find my tail. Panning is when a camera is essentially stationary, either on a tripod or handheld, and you rotate the camera from left to right. You're not moving the camera from left to right, you're actually rotating it. When you move the camera left to right, that's actually dolly. That's when you work with the dolly points, because normally it's in a film production, it's on a track, and you have a skateboard type of setup where the actual entire rig moves left to right. Jumping back up, you have tilt. Tilting is the same thing as panning, except you're going up to down. You're not actually moving the camera up to down, but you're actually tilting the pivot point. Zooming, do I really need to explain this one?
Yeah.
Okay, zooming is when you zoom into a subject. All right, try to avoid zooming if at all possible during your production. That is one of the big giveaways of someone very new to a camera and you're just zooming in and out randomly, there's no reason to zoom in the storyline. Remember that as a director of photography or the videographer, you are acting as the eyes for the audience. So if you're zooming in and moving around quickly, you're just going to cause nausea, unless you're shooting a boat scene, and then it's perfect. If you have to zoom, you'll see some zooming done in Hollywood. Mostly it's done for establishing shots, which is really wide shots of the location. And sometimes you'll see a slight zoom in and out, or vice versa in that situation. Trucking, going back over to dolly. Trucking is, if dolly is moving side to side, trucking is moving front to back. Again, the entire rig is moving, it's not just zooming in and out, because there's a very big difference in the final product. Booms are fun if you can get your hands on one. That's when you actually have the camera mounted on an arm that can actually go up, down, left, or right, and it actually gives a very unique look to your production. You can actually make your own booms and dollies. There's a couple resources online. On your, did you guys ever get a sheet? Who has the papers? Can you go ahead and pass them up? You can actually make the dollies and the booms yourself for relatively cheap. The link on there called google.com is your new best friend. Use it. And a quick note about dolly and trucking. You're actually using the exact same rig. You're just changing the angle that the camera is mounted on this system. Okay? Anyone have any questions about the basic shot types here? Well, you first start off by saving $200,000 and no. How high up did you need to go?
I don't know, like a building, like on top of a building,
I've seen some interesting results with balloons. If your angle can be locked off and it just needs to go up, you could get it with that. Make sure you tether your camera, though, please. I don't want to be responsible for you losing your $3,000 camera. That's not on my conscience. But yeah, I've seen some interesting results with balloons, and you can actually get very small HD cameras. They're called GoPros, if anyone's ever heard of them. And you can actually, they're very light, but they have amazing image quality. And because you're most likely going to be working outside, you have the sun to help you with the lighting, so you don't have to worry about bringing in massive lights. So that would be an interesting idea, is to take a GoPro, mount it, make sure you tether the darn thing, and then let it go and see what kind of shots you can get. Be careful of where you are, power lines and legal issues. You don't want to go too high or bad things could happen. Any other questions? Sure, what's up? We can get to that when we get into the software stuff. There's actually one on there called Blender. It's a free open source 3D modeling tool and 3D animation. It's very good, but we can get into those details a little bit further in. Camera angles. This is where your angle either up, down, or dead on. You can kind of read here. The different angles will help portray the feeling of different feelings, if that makes sense. So having the camera high and looking down on the subject would make them feel small or childlike almost. And then the opposite would be if you have the angle looking up at them, you would make them look powerful or something along those lines. And then straight on is what you'll normally end up doing. Here's an interesting one. This is called the Dutch angle or the oblique angle. This is where the camera is actually tilted just slightly. And it kind of gives that weird psychological bad guy feeling, as you can see from Ryan versus Dorkman here. Moving forward, different shot types. Actually, did anyone have any questions about the angles?
How do they make it like, how do they make it like the shorter?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I know with the earlier ones, they actually had a platform cut in, like if they were just doing waist shot up or medium shot, which we'll get into here in a second, they actually had a hole cut in the floor for some of the scenes, so they just appeared smaller. I'm pretty sure most of it was done with motion graphics, though. Okay. So they had a double for that. I like that. That's interesting. Kind of speaking along that, with the doubles, for Star Wars, mainly Episode 3, you all remember Count Dooku there in the beginning. He doesn't actually move that fast. And so most of that was actually done with a stunt double. And what they ended up doing is later, visual effects have come far enough where they actually did a complete head replacement. So it looks like the actual actor, Christopher Lee, who played Count Dooku. All right, back to shot types, unless anyone else had any questions. No? Okay. Shot types, we're not going to go over every single one. There's a lot of them. But here are the basic ones that kind of give you a basic understanding of where the other ones fall in. So you have an extreme wide shot here. This is taken from Pirates of the Caribbean on a Stranger's Tide. This is a wide shot. This is a high angle wide shot from Ryan vs. Dorkman 2. Here's another example of a wide shot. And wide shots are normally from the feet up. So normally you'll go from feet to right above the head. Medium shots, you'll have waist up. And then remember you want to leave a little bit of space on the head, above the head, because you don't want to chop off people's heads. Close-up shots. Close-up shots are a different story. Here they're following the rule of thirds, which we'll get into here in just a couple seconds. But you want to make sure you frame it from the chest up. If you need to follow the rule of thirds, you can take off a little bit of their head. For this type of shot, it fits fine. Here's another close-up shot. This mic doesn't like me. An extreme close-up shot is pretty obvious here and close. And that can either be done by physically moving the camera close in, or you can also use the zoom. Here's another one. And then over-the-shoulder shots kind of gives you the ability to keep both of your subjects in the scene to see what they're doing, but focus on one. Scene coverage. Did anyone have any questions about the different shots? Scene coverage. Hopefully, if you're shooting video, you actually have a reason behind shooting, aka a story. So make sure you plan ahead. Who here has heard of storyboards? Okay. Storyboarding, if you're an artist, not like me, I'm horrible at drawing. Storyboarding is amazing when you want to plan ahead of time and figure out what exactly you want to get for your final product. So you can, what you would do at this point is you would plan ahead. You would say, I would have this scene. I have two people. They're talking to each other. How many shots do I need? What angles do I want to get? So if I had two people up here, I would say three different angles. I'd have over the shoulder for each one of them, and then I'd have a wide shot. That's how I would shoot that. So plan ahead, figure out what you need to get while you're there, because there's no worse feeling than going back to the editing room and realizing that I don't have everything. It sucks. I've been there, done that. When you shoot the thing, most of you will probably be shooting with just one camera. Higher end productions, you'll be using multiple cameras. Like if you're shooting a wedding or something like that, you can't use this technique. But when you're shooting a movie-style production, you can actually use just one camera. And then just take that camera and run it, run through the scene the entire time for each one of your angles. Make sense? That way you're not wasting time, you're not cutting back and forth in the middle of your production. Let's jump forward here. Really quickly, the rule of 180. This is a really important rule that you should follow for basic filmmaking. The rule states that you would have, if you were working with two subjects or any type of material, you have a line running straight through it, parallel, and then you would not cross that line. Because if you do, what ends up happening is your subject swaps sides. and it disorients the audience, and they don't know what happened. Because you know what happened, because you're sitting in the editing room, oh yeah, we just moved the camera over the line and shot it from behind them. They have no idea what happened. If you actually need to cross that line, pick up your camera, dolly across it, because then they know, okay, I'm on the other side now, and the person on the left is now the person on the right. If you don't do this, it just swaps mid-scene. Rule of thirds, I talked about this earlier, this is really important. It dictates that you would have your frame divided equally into three different sections, both left and right. And what you would want to do is you would want to denote or frame your subject so it's on one of these lines. For this one, you can see it was the horizon line was placed at the bottom. That's one rule of third to remember. And then your subject was placed on either the left or the right. Here's another example here. Again, the horizon line is on the top line this time, and your subject is on the left. So, one more here. This is an interesting one. Again, your main foreground is here on the bottom line. Your subject is on the left. And one thing to notice is your subject is looking towards the inside of your frame. So, if I'm shooting this, I would want to make sure that the camera is framed so that the person... So that there's room on the side of the camera that the person is looking. Otherwise, it kind of just seems cut off. Because if we reverse that, then the cheetah is just looking at nothing, and we have all the space over there that's being wasted. We're going to go into very basic lighting. Really basic lighting setup. You'll normally use two or three lights. One main or fill light, or key light, I'm sorry, here on the front side, normally 45 degrees off the subject. And then the next light is something in the back. If I stand over here, you can kind of see what the effect would be. It highlights the back, and it also fills in the face. And you can actually also bring in one of these. These are normally used as project boards or anything like or something like that. You can actually reflect light off of them, and it diffuses the light and makes a really soft light that fills in the gaps. It's really neat to use that in production. Speaking to that, here's my tail. There we go. Speaking to that, here is the bouncers or the whiteboards in use. They're actually using the sun and then just bouncing it back and forth, and that is filling in all those harsh shadows that doesn't work very well. Here's an example. The one on the left is just one primary light up above his head, and then one over here is with a reflector board or a whiteboard down to the side to kind of fill in that harsh shadow. Audio, if you can, try to get decent audio equipment. It will make the world of a difference in your production. A shotgun mic, a decent shotgun mic, normally starts around $150. You can get lower quality ones. The one that's over there mounted on the boom pole is about $55, and it's for the money, it's a really good improvement to the onboard microphone. Avoid using the onboard microphone if at all possible. High-end mic is worthless if you're using cheap cables. If you're using tiny little headphone cables and you're going 50 feet, because they're small cables, they're not insulated, you're getting a lot of interference on that cable, which is going to cause buzzing and noises and just unpleasantries. Keep an eye on your levels. If at all possible, keep headphones plugged in and listen to it while you're recording. Who here has been riding with a friend who has a really bad car speaker system and they keep trying to pump the music up to make it louder? Anyone? You know how it starts sounding really awful the louder it gets? If you don't watch your levels, that's going to happen to your audio. So make sure that you... Yeah, what's up?
Does the wire go straight to the camera?
In that situation, yes, it goes. It plugs straight into the camera. I don't have the extension plug or the cord on it, but yes, you would just plug it into the side of the camera in that case. And most consumer level cameras do have mic inputs. So let's... we're running out of time here, so let's move forward a little bit. Keep an eye on your levels, make sure they don't peak, make sure they don't start sounding like your friend's bad car system. If that happens and you don't realize it until you're in the editing room, you essentially have to start over with the audio because there's no repairing that. Editing room. Once again, who here has a computer that they can do editing on? It should be just about, okay. Again, you can buy one really cheap. $500 will get you a good place to start. Here is the editing software that I personally use. It's Adobe Premiere Pro CS5. And this is, again, that project I was working on a little while ago. Here are the basic key components that you need to keep in mind. The timeline, this is actually where you're going to be doing your cuts and moving your clips around. Your preview, this is what you're going to see, obviously. And then your assets. When you're working with assets or your actual files, try, especially if you're working on a big project, try to keep them as organized as possible. It's very painful when you have 200 plus video clips that you're working with and you're trying to find that one clip, that one close-up that you cannot find. You end up spending 2 hours trying to find the darn thing. So organize your shots before you start your project. It'll save you so much time. Effects window, depending on the software that you're using, you'll most likely be able to have effects. This is a color correction effect that I was using. This is actually how I white balanced that one example shot that I used. And then, again, everything all together. When you're cutting, what you can do, and what most people recommend, is cut in motion. So if you have a wide camera and a medium camera, or a camera set up for a wide angle and then for a medium shot, try to cut in motion so that the actor is actually doing something when you make the swap, because what's going to happen is it's just going to feel like a natural cut. And then here's another one here. PowerPoint would stop. There we go. So he reaches in to hug his mother. We cut midway through his hug, and then when he goes back to accept his other reward, or award, we cut back. So make sure you cut in motion, and that will help with smoothing out your transitions. I'm sorry? No. No, the lighting in there was wacky.
Did you do that same shot on both
those
cameras at the same time?
You could. You could use the whole idea of using one camera, going through the scene, changing the angle, going through the scene, changing the angle, going through the scene. And you could, as long as they duplicate their motions and their words or in their dialogue, you should be able to use that same theory. Because if they turn to look at someone and the camera's over here and they're starting to look over this direction, change the camera angle over here so in mid-turn that you can still see their face and you still have contact with the subject. Any other questions about editing? There's a couple on here. Most of them, you know of a couple?
Vidimix is on Linux. Can't remember the other one.
Yeah. Some of them, there's software on Linux called Wine that allows you to run software for Windows inside of Linux. It may or may not work, but that's something to look into. If there's software on Windows or Mac or something that you really want to use, you can check that out. Here's a couple of the basic programs. Wax is, I'm pretty sure, works in Wine, but Wax is an open source video editing software that you can use. It's cheap, or not cheap, it's free, and it does a pretty decent job. All right. There's also a couple other free options. Most of them are already listed on your sheet, so take a look at them in your own time when you have a chance. Other software to keep in mind, Caltech or Silix is an interesting software. It allows you to do script writing, storyboarding, and asset management all in one piece of software. It is free. You can, of course, buy add-ons and things of that nature. So check that one out. Audacity, if you ever work with any type of audio, Audacity is the number one program for working with audio for free. Handbrake, if you have a camera, a consumer level camera that puts out really funky video files that your editor doesn't like, you can actually use Handbrake to convert those files and transcode them to something that your editor can use.
Is the Handbrake
BREAK, I believe. It's listed, the actual link is on your sheet. Blender, you were talking about 3D software. That is a really amazing piece of software. It's completely open source and it's free. So, and they've done some amazing projects with it. If you check out your sheet, there's a link to Colin Levy's website under resources. He actually directed, he's a friend of mine, he directed the Blender demonstration projects, and Sentinel is the most recent one that came out. Yep. It does animation and actual 3D modeling. You can also look at 3ds Max, Maya, and a couple higher-end softwares, but you're going to pay the money for that.
So, would you recommend if you can afford 3ds Max and Maya over Blender? Have it a lot better?
That's a tough argument. It depends on the person. If you already have a grasp of what's going on and you want something more, you can look at Maya. Maya is what they use in all the major film industries. But Blender is amazing. It can do just about everything Maya can. It may take a little bit longer, or you may have to finagle with it a little bit. But in most situations, it can do the exact same thing as Maya and 3ds Max. GIMP, we talked about this a little bit before we started. It's free editing or video editing. I'm sorry. Photo editing software that you can use instead of Photoshop. Questions?
Do you ever use vector arts in movie editing at all?
Sometimes you'll use them like for something called sprites, which is where the graphic is there and you actually animate that graphic. And it just depends. Vector art, when you're working with HD, is very helpful because you can just expand it up. What's up?
I have Adobe Premiere CS3,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really know how to use it.
Right. For Premiere, the best thing you can do is it's relatively, let's see if I can pull the thing up. It's a relatively straightforward software. You put the video in, you cut it, and you export it. You don't have to get into all the nitty-gritty of the effects and what everything does, but if you get a basic understanding of what the actual software can do and video basics in general, then you can just expand on it from there. Google, again, is your new best friend. There are a couple out there. I don't think I put it on the sheet, but creativecal.net, I believe, is a decent one. And then lynda.com, it's a paid location, but they have tutorials for everything, for anything, really. What's up?
Where would be a good store to buy some of the Super
Nova? Again, on your sheet, under resources, B&H Photo Video. It's really the main store for buying all of your audio video equipment. They have everything from low-end consumer grade to, I don't think you can buy an Epic on there just yet, but you can get the professional cameras without any issues. All right, let's start wrapping things up. Any final questions? What's up?
How old are you?
I am 20. Anything else?
How'd you get your awesome skills?
I have skills? No. I started really young. I picked up a video camera when I was 9, and I've been playing with them ever since. It's just something that you play with. Because I've been playing with it since I was 9, it's something I've been gradually growing on and building up over the years.
Just curious, how much have you invested?
For my company, EFRAG Television, where we do the live broadcasting, we do the video streaming and stuff, that's where I spent a majority of my money in all. For all this equipment that I have here with me, you're probably looking at about 10 grand when I bought it originally. Now it's really, it's old equipment, especially that one over there. In total, I probably spent about $20,000. Last question. I've made a decent amount of it back, yeah. I mean, for me, video and stuff like this is a hobby. It's something I enjoy. You're putting heart and emotion into it, and you're seeing the final product. So it's something, if you're looking to do it as a job, take a look at some film schools and things of that nature and see if that's something you want to do.
My sister wants to know if you're married.
No, I'm not. Thank you, though. And I do believe that's it. Thank you.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.